the show.
Well, hey everyone, and welcome to this week's show. I'm your host, Lisa Anderson, here for a very exciting show in the fact that we are going to be talking about leadership. Now, we talk about leadership sometimes here at Boundless, often, maybe, because we're passionate about it. So you're going to want to tune in because later on we have John Thomas dealing with men and spiritual leadership. And we know we always hear from you women, I want a spiritual leader. Well, what does that mean? So we're going to help you out. Then we have our culture segment, which is going to be fun. Mr. Steve Waters, many of you know him and love him. He recommended two guys to us who have written a little booklet-ish type thing. I'm going to say it's a book, but it's small, so y'all can read it. And it is called A Guide to Biblical Manhood. It is by Randy Stinson and Dan Dumas, and so we're going to be talking to them a little bit later. But right now we're going to do a roundtable on leadership. We have a few of us at the table. I want to introduce Robert Thomason. Robert, welcome.
Oh, hi, Elise. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Robert is our Senior Fellow for Gender and Leadership Studies here at Focus on the Family at the Focus Leadership Institute. He has been on the show before, and sometimes I feel like I just want to bring you back for your accent.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. I've been living in Colorado Springs 10 years now, and I have not lost my accent, so
it's an identifying marker. It's fun. But you actually, you know, you have personal and professional skills to bring to the table, too, so we're going to be excited to hear what you have to say about leadership.
Well, thank you.
Today, as we deal with this topic. The rest of us are just regular people talking about leadership who have either tried to lead unsuccessfully or are leading or are doing our best to kind of wiggle our way towards some kind of role that we're being called to. So Martha is here at the table. Hey, Martha.
Hello, Lisa.
How's it going?
Going well.
Good. You ready to lead?
Yeah! I'm ready to talk about leadership. How about
okay.
that?
Okay, because you're supposed to be leading a small group, so you
I
get
am.
Some pointers.
I am. I'm co-leading.
Oh,
so.
Cool. Okay, that's good.
Yeah, working through that right now.
All right, that's legit. Awesome. All right, Matt Erisman, welcome, Matt.
Hi, thanks, Lisa.
Great
it's good to be
have
back.
You here. I know. Matt's a fun guy, so we like Aww. Him.
Thanks, Lisa. My heart just got all fuzzy.
He always has a lot of fun stuff going on. It's fun following his life and following him on Twitter and stuff. He's a good guy. So,
oh, you're on Twitter?
I am.
I had to follow you.
Yeah.
He's a Twitter maniac. He's one of those social media.
I'm not a Twitter maniac.
Okay.
Andrew
not
Hess
maniac,
is a Twitter maniac.
Okay.
This is true.
Yeah. That's
fresh
true.
Epiphany.
We have others in our fold that are more maniacs. So, and Amy Seed. Amy.
Hey.
Our other half of the intern pool this summer.
Yeah.
We kept her for an extra week so we could continue to utilize her skills. So you remember, all of you remember our Megan produced show. Megan took on the show where we had to deal with gray areas and lifestyle stuff and we just blazed everyone away. I got a Facebook confession yesterday. Someone posted on my wall that they did, in fact, go and see Hangover 2.
Wow. Ooh,
so they said, I'm ready for my rebuke. Yeah. And I said, since they were very upfront about it and did confess and seemed appropriately penitent, I was going to let it slide. So, and it was a public confession, so that was good. So, but this is Amy's show. And Amy came up with this topic and basically put together the show herself and worked the elements of it so that we kind of have this theme and have it all tied together well. So, Amy, give us a little idea of what prompted you to come up with this topic and feel like it was something good and relevant for us to address.
Sure. I think the idea of leadership is really interesting because I definitely see how men and women lead differently. And I know for myself, I found myself in a lot of leadership positions at school and I'm over men. And it's just kind of interesting to think like, I can not boss them around, but make them, you know, ask them to do things and they have to listen because I'm in charge of them. And I don't know, it's just really interesting. I think because I assume that men are natural leaders just because the way I've grown up, just men are supposed to take leadership. And I don't know, so it's just weird to be over men. And so specifically in the workplace, I think it's just interesting. And then, you know, being a woman, it's like, I want to get married someday, but what if I have a leadership position at work and then I have to go home and let my husband take that role? So I don't know, just thinking about the transition of all of that.
Yeah, that's a lot to navigate. Mm-hmm. So, all right, well, Robert, I think it might be good for you to step into the conversation here because this is something that you do every day. You help our students here at the Focus Indeed. Leadership Institute kind of navigate those waters, especially as they are launching into young adulthood and figuring out where their place is going to be in any number of these different roles. And as I'm thinking about it, and especially as Amy was talking, I was thinking, maybe I'll start by asking you this. Is this, like men and women in leadership, is this one of those Mars and Venus, waffles and spaghetti kind of thing? Or is this like a personality thing? Or what really do we need to know when it comes to genders in leadership?
You know, I think we'll start first with just defining our terms. Mm-hmm. You know, what is leadership? Mm-hmm. Leadership is all about influence. It's what it is. And it doesn't, you don't necessarily have to have a position to be a leader. Christ never had a position per se on this earth as he walked this earth. And so, but yet his influence led a huge change in the way that we relate to the Lord, obviously, a personal relationship with Christ. So from a leadership perspective, I guess a question you could ask then is, are leaders born or are they made? And you all feel free to chime in at any point on this. I take the approach that leadership is both. Yes, Oswald Sanders in his book, Spiritual Leadership, talks about how it's one, it's each, it's both, it's yes. Mm-hmm. And in that, let me describe this to you. It's like shooting a basketball or driving a car. We all can learn basic skills to shoot a basketball or drive a car, but there's some of us that are going to be much better at it than others. Mm-hmm. Not everybody's going to be Jeff Gordon or Dale Earnhardt Jr., or we're not all going to be Kobe Bryant or Michael Jordan. Some just do it better than others, but we can all learn those basic skills on how to lead.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So looking at the definitions, you know, obviously, okay, so there are, that's kind of what it looks like. I think it's a good thing to throw out the whole idea of influence, because I think that is important. I think a lot mm-hmm. of people think, you know, well, I don't have anything to speak into the situation because I don't have the associated title or the yeah. degree or whatever I need to be yeah. able to mm-hmm. do that. And I think that's where you see a lot of that play into, whether it is the workplace or even the home, you see people mm-hmm. kind of, you know, then say, okay, well, I need to step back. Mm-hmm. I know I've heard John Maxwell talk about mm-hmm. this, Robert, the idea of, you know, there's kind of that first level of leadership, and that's just something where, because you're specifically given a title, and you can mm-hmm. tell right. people what to do, and they have mm-hmm. to listen to you, and then you eventually go up, up, up the ladder, different levels, right. until you're a person who, just by virtue of who you are, people will follow you. Mm-hmm. And I, right. just for sake of, you know, giving an example, I would put maybe an Oprah in that category. Mm-hmm. Oprah knows nothing, I would say, really about politics, but if she were to throw out a candidate that she's voting right. for, people would vote along with her.
Yeah.
Dr. Dobson right. would be in that category.
Tremendous amount of influence. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly. Martha, of course.
Absolutely.
Of course. So,
what Martha you know, says goes. Like,
so, you know, there were a few who were mm-hmm. in that role. But what do you guys think, and I'll start by throwing it out to you guys, did you have a period in your life where you were kind of like, leadership is something I need to, somehow I need to get my act together because this is going to be expected of me and it's something I need to do? Or did you consider yourself one of those born leader types?
I think I've always had leadership characteristics, but I think one thing that's been helpful for me just along the way, I've had several opportunities to kind of lead, especially in college, and usually those were times when people noticed qualities in me and they encouraged me to move forward. And I think that's super crucial, to kind of encourage other people. If you notice qualities in someone, I think that's really super important for bringing up future leaders. And that's kind of how I got tossed into all my leadership roles, is for some reason, somewhere along the way, someone encouraged me to take that next step. And I think that's important what you were saying about the titles, mm-hmm. Because I first thought it was kind of funny that I was invited to this conversation, because I think I am the youngest employee at Focus on the Family.
Oh,
I'm 23. I think I'm the youngest one. And my position is coordinator, which if you work in the corporate world, you know, that's like, you know, the dirt below the totem pole. So like I am right now I'm at the point where I'm like working my way up. So my title right now is not influential necessarily, but for some reason, I think I've just been given certain characteristics that some people associate with leadership. And so I think that's important. Like what you said, is that you don't have to be necessarily a president or a manager or whatever to lead. You can still take opportunities that you're given and make the most of them.
Mm-hmm. And having creative ideas and being willing to speak up about them and stuff.
Yeah.
I think it will, you know, it can often belie your title in that
sense. Yeah, definitely.
That's good. So how, give an example, Matt, of how in college, for example, because I think that's good to make the distinction. Mm-hmm. There are some people who will go after, they're going to take the bull by the horns. They're going to be like, I'm going to take charge of this because I love it. And there are other people who have to have leadership called out of them. Mm-hmm. And by that inviting kind of mechanism, how did it work for you? Give a good example.
Yeah, well, it's kind of funny because when I came in my freshman year, I think I come across kind of reserved and quiet. So my first year at, I went to Sterling College in Kansas, tiny school probably no one's heard of. But my first year I was kind of quiet. I was kind of just figuring out what I was going to do the next 4 years. So my freshman year I really didn't do hardly any activities. I was just kind of trying to figure things out. I was just kind of scoping out what the college life was like. So I remember my RD, my resident director, my senior year, he kind of recalled back when he first met me, and he's like, he not necessarily would have guessed that I would be the person that would ended up being one of the leaders on campus. So I ended up being an RA, and I was the editor of our newspaper. I led a worship band for a while, and my senior year, I ended up being our student government president. And so it's kind of funny that, you know, I walked in this kind of shy, like, I don't know what I'm doing here, and I ended up being someone that I think, for some reason, people looked up to. And so I think I didn't necessarily walk in the doors of Sterling College and be like, I'm going to own this place someday. Like, that was never my intention. But I guess I just did my best to take advantage of opportunities. And I don't want to be, like, super big-headed. And that's I don't want to sound like, oh, I'm this important person. But I think that's important, just take advantage of your opportunities. And even if you're not necessarily, like, if you don't think you're a leader, but you're given an opportunity, just try and do your best and just see what happens from there.
Mm-hmm. You know, man, I think you touched on something very important and something that I try to encourage our students to do all the time, and that's engagement. It's mm-hmm. engaging. It's a principle of engaging and engaging in the situation. And once you mm-hmm. got comfortable where you were, you began to engage.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think that's so vitally important. I think in my own life how when I was growing up, I was blessed to be I pursued, and then I also was fortunate enough to, you know, just be asked to be in several different leadership positions, whether it was in middle school, high school, college, and even once I graduated. I'll never forget, I went through that kind of period in my life where I was basically this slacker who was playing video games all day long and not doing anything with my life. And being a believer and a strong believer at the time, you know, really seeking God, I felt this horrible disconnect, this cognitive dissonance of knowing in my head what I should be doing, but in my heart that wasn't the way it was playing out. And so I felt horrible about it. And I'll tell you what, I came to the Institute, believe it or not, and while I was here I met my wife. And I'll never forget when I met this woman, I thought, this woman, I've got a lot of catching up to do, and I've got to actually go apply myself now in all these other areas, because she was on the ball. I mean, she was doing all these cool things, and I was like, I need to go engage. Mm-hmm. You know, I need to get out of this funk I've been in, and I need to go engage in life.
Yeah.
And so I was 25 when I attended the Institute. And once I went through that, I realized, hey, I need to get a job. And I had a job, but it wasn't a career-oriented job, I'll put it that way. And so I then began to pursue these things, and I began to want to lead this woman. She was a woman that made me want to be a better man. And I'll tell you what, I was thinking, you know, if you, to all those men and women out there who are listening, if you can find you that kind of individual who makes you want to be a better person, who makes you want to strive to know God in a deeper, more intimate way, I think you found yourself a jewel. And I tell you what, that engrossed me. I thought, I want to know the Lord more deeply. I want to lead her. And let me tell you what I mean when I want to lead her. When we look at Scripture, if you go to Genesis chapter 2, we see that in the garden, God gave Adam two jobs, and that was to provide and protect, provision and protection. And so, and then we see in Ephesians chapter 5 where Paul instructs husbands to love their wives. And so my mentor is a man that I'm very blessed to be meeting with for the past 10 years. He has something he calls the LLPP principle, love, lead, protect, provide. Love, lead, protect, provide. And so I know I began to think along those lines. How can I be intentional? How can I engage in loving her well, leading her well, protecting and providing for her? And then the Lord kind of, the more I thought about it, the more I reveled in it, the more I began to examine it, The Lord led me to a verse of scripture, Luke 2:52, and it's Jesus grew in wisdom and stature and favor with God and man. And if Jesus was the greatest leader, you know, arguably one of the greatest leaders the world has ever known, the greatest leader the world has ever known, then I think it would be safe to say if he grew in those four areas and we were called to be like Christ, then we should also grow in those four areas too. And Jesus grew in wisdom, he grew mentally, he grew in stature, so there's a physical realm that he had that was addressed, but he also grew in favor with God, so there's a spiritual realm, and he grew in favor with man, social emotional realm. And so when you begin to lay that over, if you could think of a grid, if you will, love, lead, protect, provide, and then you've got this spiritual realm, this social emotional realm, this mental realm, and this physical realm, and you begin to think, how am I going to love my wife, or, you know, love my wife in this spiritual realm, in this mental realm, in this social-emotional realm, in this physical realm. And a lot of times I think as men, we begin to think about the only way we can love our wives is in this physical, you know, protect and provide in the physical. Or if a guy's a quadriplegic, he can still protect and provide in the social-emotional, in the spiritual, in this mental realm. I mean, there's still more to it that a man can do. Mm-hmm. And I think that's so vitally important. And for guys out there that aren't married, that doesn't mean that you can't be practicing this on your sisters who are in Christ. How are you going to protect those sisters in Christ? Gentlemen, if you're dating somebody, how are you going to protect her spiritually and mentally and physically and emotionally? What are you going to do, or love her that well, or lead her that well? Men, what are you going to do in those terms as far as helping your sisters in Christ that you know at either school or work or church or wherever?
Mm-hmm. I think it's interesting, Robert, what you said, especially of that motivation to start leading and to mm-hmm. pick up your game because yeah. you met your wife and you realized where she was. And I've heard so many stories like that of other men who decided they wanted to get married. And once they had that goal and once there was something tangible to it, it was like, now's the time to get the wheels spinning and right. to get going, which is interesting because I want to talk about that in light of the women because, you know, women in leadership, it's not like we're suffragettes. I mean, we're quite a few years out of, you know, yeah. we're not in our schools or in our workplaces clawing. I mean, they're still griping about whatever, but it's not like we're clawing our way to the top or trying to be recognized or even get basic rights on anything. But it is interesting, and I know that this is the case with both Martha and Amy. They've led. They've stepped up and done stuff. They've edited. Mm-hmm. I mean, Amy's now, she alluded to it in leadership at her school. What is that dynamic? And maybe, ladies, you can speak into how you've seen this play out and maybe some of your own frustrations with it, that, you know, there has to be this, why do women just end up on this trajectory of like, you know, and they're like, whatever, and then the guys come along and they have to see them and be like, okay, I need to catch up. Like, what, have you guys seen that play out?
In college, it was easy. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I guess maybe we're just more motivated of wanting to make the best of my education and, you know, get a good head start into the future. I think it was harder coming into the workplace of, I mean, it's not just peers of fellow college students, but you're actually working with older men in their 40s, 50s, or whatever. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of a new dynamic that I think I'm still trying to figure out of how do we relate in the workplace and what is my role here. Mm-hmm. So I still have some questions about it.
Yeah.
I know I've definitely noticed women are more apt to get involved in things and they want to take on a lot more than men do. I don't know why that is. I haven't figured that out either. But I know for myself, in my leadership roles, I'm so much an introvert and I would much rather be helping out behind the scenes. But I tend to find myself in these leadership positions and I don't know how I got there, but somehow I am. And all mm-hmm. of a sudden I'm leading over men and it's really interesting. I don't know. It's just mm-hmm. different.
It's probably because you're just organized and you just do stuff.
Exactly. Responsibility.
Yeah.
It stands out.
And mm-hmm. that's where I think it, you know, it's interesting because sometimes we can confuse just being responsible and being, you know, disciplined with, you know, taking on a leadership role. Uh-huh. And sometimes uh-huh. it is just who's closest and who do we know will dot the I's and cross the T's, you know, and okay, tag, you're it, you know. So, Martha, you said you had some questions surrounding that. Go ahead and, you know, throw out one of your questions as far as, like you said, women's roles in light of that.
Well, in a former job, I was on a team of a lot of men. I think I was maybe one of the only women at our level of leadership at that point. And it just kind of like, even when there was a disagreement, it was like, how much am I going to push this of what I think? Because I don't know. First of all, I don't really like conflict. Mm-hmm. But second of all, it's just, I don't really I mean, it just felt too bold. Like, mm-hmm. how do I stay feminine in this situation, yet also carry out my role in this job?
Mm-hmm. Well, let's throw that to the guys. Yeah. Because that's one thing that women ask a lot is, you know, we get criticized for, you're too independent. We had a whole blog trail on this that just about fried out our servers because we got so many comments on it with the whole independent women's string. So what do you guys think?
Well, I think Robert might have a better answer, but I'll just kind of start the conversation by saying
no.
Well, I remember when I was in school, my senior year, I took a class specifically about how men and women communicate. And that was one of my favorite classes. I learned so much in that class. And one thing we talked about was how it's just so hard for women to be in leadership roles because they kind of fall into two categories. Either they're viewed as like the pretty nice lady. I hate the stereotype, but this is the stereotype I think a lot of people have.
I want to be the pretty nice lady.
Well, there's that, the overly rough and like not feminine woman. And man, I just feel for you guys because that'd be so hard to tread that. Because I think it's easier for guys just because we're supposed to have that kind of tough exterior, you know? Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I want to hear what Robert says because I don't know.
No, it's not an easy position to be in for sure. But I think that ultimately when you're sitting in a situation, I would say that it's about relationships and how well do you foster workplace relationships? How well do you get to know those individuals that are sitting at that table and sit down and talk with them rationally? And I one would hope that you've got individuals in the room that could see the idea for what it's worth, regardless of who it came from. So there's merit to that idea to say, yeah, this is a great idea that we need to promote that. And for our ladies out there who have caught themselves in these kinds of situations, to be gently but firmly to say, well, let's look at the idea. Let's compare this idea to another idea or vice versa. And step back and see what happens.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so let me throw out the scenario, and I know this is one that Amy brought up as being a kind of a driver into the conversation, and that is the whole workplace versus church versus home. So you have men and women, your roles may shift in either one. I mean, you know, absolutely. A guy may be someone's assistant at work, and he's an elder at church, and then he's got a family at home, and so he needs to figure out how to work all those roles. How do you guys feel those look, and how should we navigate them without being totally schizophrenic?
I'm co-leading my Bible study right now, like you had mentioned, and it's crossed my mind of my co-leader is a guy, and it's a co-ed group. And first of all, I don't feel like it's actually in my skill set to be leading at all. Like, I'll be your hostess and bake you cookies, but I don't really want to be teaching here. So I guess
you're the pretty nice lady. We've now stereotyped Martha. She just wants to bake those cookies. Okay, go ahead.
There needs to be a comment there. Pretty nice lady.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. So anyway, it's just another point of those places where I think you just need to recognize differences between men and women and being sensitive to how you go about that, whether it's communication styles or just whatever, of recognizing there is a place here and there. That I think that's the place to start, at least.
Mm-hmm. Now, as far as the structure of the group, though, is there anything when your co-leader says something or some idea that he's had where you've been like, or how do you navigate that, you know, to speak into something where,
well,
since you are co-leading?
I might just offer another suggestion. Mm-hmm. I guess we haven't come to that point yet of totally disagreeing on something.
You don't have to do any throwdowns or anything like that over.
Have you thought about how you would do that?
Well,
if you did have like a big disagreement,
I might say, well, let's maybe talk to some others and get some more viewpoints about it. And then maybe I'll have others to back me up. I don't know. But would that be a good idea?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think in a situation where you have someone you disagree with, they pull them over to the side when the meeting's over or something, say, well, you know, we can talk about that later or whatnot, and then discuss that in private.
That's a great example, though, I think, of a very female strategy. You know, you hear about how men and women work, and women are all about the team, and let's get everyone rallied around and figure out a group decision for this and whatever, whereas guys are much more prone to just bust the cap and be like, dude, bam, you know, you're crazy, or just call them on something.
But I think that's anytime you have a disagreement like that in front of a group of people, it's good then to discuss that in private. you know, just from a leadership perspective, praise in public, discipline in private, or discuss disagreements in private. That way you don't bring it. I mean, that's a parenting tip. And quite frankly, you know, praise in public, discipline in private, or, you know, talk about with your spouse disagreements in private and come to a, you know, your partnership, come together to create resolution.
And I think here at Focus, we talk a lot about the whole love and respect thing, the whole Emerson Eggerich, you know, women need love, men need respect. So I think if a woman's in a leadership role, as long as she's still respectful to the men, then I don't think there's a problem of leadership. As long as the men still don't feel disrespected, I don't think that's an issue.
I, you know, I want to tag off what you said. And Dr. Dale Tackett here has the Truth Project. And I don't know if you've ever, any of you all have ever been through the Truth Project, but he talks about the different social spheres that God has created. And three of those spheres are the family, the church, and then, of course, society. And what, you know, Lisa, your question talked about how we move in between those spheres and how we put on the proverbial hats, the different hats that we have. And so what does it look like then to go, if you're a woman who, you know, I think if we could, we call Sarah Palin, you know, how does she do that? How does she, how was she governor of Alaska? And then we go home into her family, and how did all that play out? And what did that look like? And
not I think, that we're not saying she's not pretty or nice.
No, not at all.
She's not the correct.
No. Yeah, but I'm saying, how did she?
We love
she,
you, Sarah, because we know you listen every
week. Yeah, that's right. How did she manage those different proverbial hats when she would walk into one place where she had to be a mother and where she had to be the boss? And so I think that if her husband, and I know that he's a smart man, he's not going to try to tell her how to run. He's not going to step foot in that professional sphere of hers. Now, he will probably, hey, what do you think about X, Y, and Z? And he can ask. But if he's smart, he's not going to step into that realm and begin to say, well, you need to, you know, run the state this way or that way, or, you know, so on and so forth. And so, and then, of course, when you go into that sphere of the church, you know, the Bible is, I believe, very clear in 1 Timothy chapter 2, 11 through 15, 1 Corinthians 11, 1 Corinthians 14, that talks about that. There's a great book called Recovering Biblical Manhood and Womanhood that covers a lot of those verses in detail. And we don't necessarily be able to go into those. But I had Dr. Dorothy Patterson come speak in class, and Dr. Dorothy Patterson is the wife of Dr. Paige Patterson, who is the president of Southwestern Baptist Theological Seminary in Fort Worth, Texas. And it was very interesting. They have many times asked Dr. Dorothy Patterson, what would, you know, we need a list of things women can do in the church. And she said, it's innumerable. She said, there's a small handful of things that the Bible restricts leadership for women in the church. He said, but there's, you know, innumerable amount of things that women can do in the church. I think that men are called to lead, especially every man, when you have that family, you're called to lead that family. But women have the ability to lead. Mm-hmm. And in those appropriate places, absolutely step up and use those gifts God has given you. Mm-hmm.
So let's move, just in our last couple minutes here, let's move to that realm of spiritual leadership. And we're going to deal with that in our inbox question as well. But I just want to get your perspective on this. Ladies, I want you to speak into both all of us still being single, what we're expecting on that front, what you feel you're expecting that's realistic and what's not realistic, possibly. And then guys, what do you kind of feel, you know, Robert, you are leading a family, and Matt someday, no doubt. You know, what do you feel are the expectations on you, biblical, and maybe then some ones that have been impressed upon you from elsewhere, good or not? The illustration I always love to give, I just love this. A dear friend of mine got married not too long ago, and her husband said they had to work out, you know, in the early months of their marriage, what that looked like, because her vision of spiritual leadership was him eventually sitting around the living room with a guitar with all their kids leading worship choruses. He's like, first of all, I don't even play the guitar. But she assumed he would learn the guitar and then maybe write some of his own choruses and lead their kids in these. And so it was a very big chasm that they had to cross and what that was going to look like. So give me your thoughts on that.
I think one of the most important things is regular church attendance. And I know, like, prayer is a big deal for me. I don't know. A lot of my friends and I will all share prayer requests, and I think it's important for a man to initiate that in spiritual leadership. I don't know.
I think another thing is just setting the example of you see him get up early and reading his Bible, or you see him making it a priority to adjust his schedule to be there Wednesday night, or I don't know what all the different things would be, but mm-hmm. just that you see a difference and you want to join that, I guess, is mm-hmm. what I would be looking for.
Yeah. I think for me, it's just those two things, but also then just a general excitement about the Lord. Mm-hmm. Like someone that I feel like I'm always just pulling teeth to even get any experience with what they're doing with the Lord is just like, okay, you know. So, mm-hmm. yeah, someone who will initiate conversations about the Lord and just share what God's doing in his life, I think is important to me.
That's good.
What about you guys? What do you think?
I think a lot of guys, maybe specifically younger guys, are really intimidated by that because maybe they feel like they aren't a leader at all. And so when they're dating or looking to get married, they're like, I have no idea what I'm doing, but I'm supposed to do this. What does that look like? And I'm totally going to steal this. We just recently talked to Gary Thomas. And so I really liked what he had to say. He's the author of Sacred Marriage, and I really like him. And one thing he said, though, is that you can start super simple. So like if you just don't know how to lead your wife just or your girlfriend or whoever, you can just start by saying, you know, how can I pray for you today? Hmm. Like that's one thing you could do. You know, pretty much any guy could do that. Even if you think you're not good at praying, like you could just do that. And that's pretty easy. And that's just a really good first way to start. So I think that's a really good idea. And then you can kind of gradually build from there. And then it's kind of hard for me right now. I'm dating my girlfriend, Tilly. We've been dating for about a year and a half, but we live in different states. And so I've kind of thought about that too. How can I lead spiritually from a different state? Hmm. So we pray together a lot, but one thing I've started doing is if I'm doing a devotional or quiet time or something, sometimes I'll just text her like a verse that I really liked or just a thought that I'm thinking about. And that's something I think that's relatively easy to do too. If you're a guy, you're doing a quiet time anyway, and you're dating someone, even if it's not related to your relationship, if you just kind of have one of those like, oh man, that was a cool thing, just pull out your phone and text it real quick. And I think you can do small things like that and they'll be appreciated by the girl more than you probably know. Mm-hmm. And then you can just kind of slowly build on that as you grow.
Yeah. One thing I appreciate from my single guy friends, when we are out, you know, and I think this is another one of those in the categories of just an easy thing to get started with. When we're all just out as a group eating at a restaurant and one of them just says, okay, everyone, let's pray. You know, and he just mm-hmm. takes the initiative to say, let's pray, our food's here, let's get going, and kind of calls the whole table, you know, and it's not mm-hmm. the super awkward thing. I just thought that's really a cool thing and a great habit to get into.
Yeah.
You know, if guys can do that. You can pray for meals, people. Figure out how to do it.
No, Matt, I think you're right. It is those little things that you start out mm-hmm. with. I know personally it's carving out prayer time with my wife. Yeah, I've got three kids, a 7-year-old, a 3-year-old, and a 7-month-old. Mm-hmm. And the two older ones, I pray with them every single night. Mm-hmm. And not only does that provide an example for them, but that also communicates to my wife that I'm dedicated in my faith. I meet with a mentor. I make sure we're up and we're heading to church for the most part on time every week. But I mean, that's one of those things where it's as a leader of my home, I need to take the initiative. I need to engage in the situation. Mm-hmm. And then also I need to create space for my wife to grow closer to God too. I may ask her, hey, what'd you learn in your quiet time today? Or, you know, your time with the Lord. And it initiates a great hour, 2-hour discussion about what God's doing or where he's leading us or, you know. And so, you know, it starts with those little bitty things. You're exactly right. And then I think there's this natural progression mm-hmm. that says, hey, I want to grow deeper. And I tell you, man, it's just a very... you know, it's that it goes back to leading your wife spiritually or leading the women in your life spiritually. Mm-hmm. And what does that look like? Whether it be your girlfriend or you know, women that you're really good friends with. And you're exactly right, Lisa. It's that, hey, let's pray. And sometimes I think men are very, very nervous. I was just eating dinner in a guy's house where we were in the midst of, there were Christians and non-Christians together. And the guy whose home it was, announced, I know him to be a believer, but I know he was scared to ask everyone to pray. Mm. So, hey, let's offer a quick prayer. And as a result, my brother and I, it was kind of the everyone rushed in and started eating before we could say, hey, let's hold on a second, let's pray. And it was a very interesting situation to go, man, that would have been not only a great witness, but a great leadership opportunity for him to stand up in front of these folks. So, hey, we're going to offer a quick prayer for the food. And it didn't have to be anything long, 20-second prayer. And it just didn't happen. And suddenly we were like, man, that was a missed opportunity. Mm-hmm. And I know that fear, He was afraid.
Yeah.
Let me tell you, I can't encourage everyone out there who's listening enough. Do not allow fear to rob you of opportunities and ways God wants to bless you. Mm-hmm. Don't allow it, because I think my generation, I'm not that old, generation Xers, generation Yers, we live our lives in fear. Fear of failure, scared to death. And, you know, we have to take the initiative to step out on faith that if God has called us there, He's already walked that path. He's already waiting there for us. He's beckoning us to follow Him. All we have to do is take that step. Mm-hmm. And run after Him, because He is going to be there for us. He is going to watch us, and that's when life gets exciting. When we act in spite of our fear, we act on our courage, an attitude of courage. Courage is not an emotion; it's an attitude. Courage assumes fear, and when we act upon that attitude of courage, incredible things can happen, and God can do mighty things through it.
I think that's great, and I think that dovetails a lot with what Martha was saying about, you know, women wanting that example. And it's so, you know, you don't have to go up and speak in front of your church. You don't have to write a Bible study. You don't have to be John Piper. You do have to love the Lord and live that out. And what does that look like? It may look different for a number of different people. And I think it also merges well with what we talked about in Megan's show, in the show where we talked about just life and what does our life look like, in the sense that, taking a stand on anything is one of the best examples and one of the best indications of leadership, to really draw that line and to say, you know what, here's where I am, and this is what I'm going to take a stand on, and this is what, you know, and to show that in your actions, I think is so huge. So some great examples for that. I want to thank all of you guys for weighing in on this. This is a great discussion, just a springboard, I think, for something that we could probably talk about for days.
Absolutely.
That's why people like Robert have jobs with this title. He needs to.
I know there's so much more I want to add, and I'm thinking, no, I can't talk about that. I got to sift through that.
Maybe we'll have to do a leadership series at some point and bring in all these different aspects. So in the meantime, write to us, editor@boundless.org, with your own thoughts or even some questions or kind of conundrums you've come up against as you've tried to lead or been under leadership or are looking ahead to roles of leadership, whether at home or in the church or where you are. Great discussion, everyone. Thanks for being part of it.
Thanks, Lisa.
Oh, I know what I want. I want you. It's you.
Everyone, I am very privileged for this week's culture segment to have two guys on the phone who have been recommended to me by some guy named Steve Waters. You may know him. You may have heard of him. But these guys are going to join us today for a discussion on men and leadership. And I want to introduce Randy Stinson and Dan Dumas. Welcome, guys.
Thanks.
Glad
to be here.
Well, even if you are just joining us by phone, we want to welcome you to Boundless and to this discussion, because we have a number of folks in our audience who are very eager to know everything they can about leadership and or about men. So <Yeah. laughs> usually it's the women that just want to know about the men, you know, and then the guys are like, okay, tell me something practical. So we're going to talk about a little book that you guys have, and it's called A Guide to Biblical Manhood. It's something that Steve passed along. Hey, Steve, I just talked to Steve a few minutes ago. He's there listening in to make sure these guys are legit and say the right stuff, I'm assuming. But I think we've got a couple of good experts in our midst, because Dan is one of the, are you senior vice president? Is that it, Dan? You're at Southern Baptist Theological Seminary. You are also a pastor?
Yes, ma'am. I am one of the senior vice presidents. There are two.
Oh, there were two.
Senior vice presidents. I am one of them. So okay. I'm not the definite article, but
are you the one that does the most work, though? Because really that's what matters.
I won't go on record saying that.
Okay. Well, you've done a lot of stuff. You are also one of two also founding pastor teachers at Eastside Community Church. You were in the United States Navy. You are married. You just have got a lot going on. So yeah,
absolutely. We are two adopted boys.
Two
so
adopted
I'm raising boys as well.
Okay. You're raising boys and you are contributing to books, so you've got a lot going on. Also with us is Randy Stinson. Randy is president of the Council on Biblical Manhood and Womanhood. He is also dean of the School of Church Ministries at the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary. Both of these guys in Louisville, by the way, just in case you guys didn't know where that is. And Randy hopefully has something good to say to us because he has got a BA, an MDiv, a THM, and a PhD. So that's a lot of book learning there. Randy, that's a lot.
I've taken a few tests and written a few papers.
Okay. And he has like 30,000 children.
But he has a lot of kids.
Yes.
I have seven.
Okay. All right. Well, that's good. We applaud that. That's good. Our editor-producer, Martha, is one of seven as well, and she's said it's only a good experience.
That is
I'm
true.
One of
we're
six.
We're focusing on our family.
That's good. See? Well, very privileged to have you two guys here. Like I said, the guide is called The Guide to Biblical Manhood. For some reason, you guys felt the need to write this. I love it on the front cover. A guy is just flat out on his back. So that's somewhat eye-catching. Give us just a brief little idea of why you guys felt this book had to be written. What motivated it?
Well, I think part of it was coming... We decided to take a group of students. We did a class in January, and our goal was to deal with the practical theology of biblical masculinity. There are a lot of theologies out there, but not a lot was being stated and said about the practical theology, and so we kind of drove down that path. That was the adventure, and so we taught an intensive, which is 5 days, all day, and we knew that we would take the content from there and quickly move to produce this particular book in hopes that it would help the movement and bring awareness and really provide some practical theology.
Yeah, one of the challenges here that Dan and I noticed is we're dealing with a lot of 18 to 30-year-old young men on this campus who many of them are married, and these men are convinced that they need to be leaders, providers, and protectors as they read the scriptures, but one of the things that they're deficient in, and most young men are deficient in, is what does that look like? And so we wanted to be rooted in the scriptures, but have a high-end application and be very practical in this book for young men to just see what it looks like.
Yeah, I think also convictionally, Lisa, that before you can be a leader, you need to understand what it means to be a man. Mm-hmm. And I think they were kind of jumping over the masculinity side of it. As expressed in that form of leadership, and jumping right into leadership. And so we want to kind of, back up one level and say, let's talk about masculinity, which informs then effective gospel-centered leadership.
Mm, that's mm-hmm. good.
Yeah. Well, and I think it is great that you guys did break it down to the practical because, I'm sure when I mentioned, that this is a book, it's really a guide. It's called a guidebook. And, I'm sure a lot of the women immediately said, well, guys don't even read books. What are they going to learn from this? So I'm going to have to read it and then just tell it to them or something like that. Well, it's kind of smallish. It actually reminds me a lot of our Boundless Guy's Guide to Marrying Well in the way that it's set up. So I think it's very readable. I love how you guys put a lot of different lists and charts in it. So it makes it really kind of fun. You can go and just take a piece here and there. Great reference stuff to go back to. But you guys kick it off really by illustrating what it means, I guess, what you describe as lessons in manhood, and you use several biblical characters to set that up. Now, lest we think that no one in the Bible has anything to do with us and they are all just unattainable saints, you guys kind of tell some stories from each of their lives as far as things that are applicable within them that could be helpful to men. So give us just a couple illustrations from that front section, you guys, on the different aspects of manhood and how they're reflected in different types of men within Scripture.
Yeah, I think the first I would draw attention to is the life of Job. You're going back 4,000 years, the first book written in the Old Testament, and you're looking at a snapshot of leadership, especially in those first two chapters of Job, and most people don't go there. Mm-hmm. And it's an amazing, amazing account of one man who was tough as nails, who did not have a copy of the Bible, who did not have a small group, who did not have a local church, and yet he demonstrates pronounced leadership and ends up at the end of the day, the worst day of anyone's life, a nightmarish day, ends up at the end of that day worshiping. And we feel like that that is essential to understanding what it means to be a man and what it means to be a Christ follower and what it means to be a leader in the gospel context. And so just pointing at Job going back 4,000 years, and he's a model. He's an archetype for early leadership and early masculinity.
Mm-hmm. And I like that because he's not someone that you would normally think. He's not the one that guys are going to put on a T-shirt, you know, for the most part. So
that's right. Good. Yeah, I'd call attention to Adam. One of the points we make in the book is that the idea of masculinity is not merely a social construct. It's rooted in the created order. God made Adam and gave Adam certain responsibilities in terms of leadership, provision, and protection in his relationship with Eve. Prior to the fall, where before sin entered into the world, there were still roles and responsibilities that were unique to Adam and unique to Eve, as they both are called to exercise dominion, subdue the earth. They're going to do that in different ways, and it's going to look very different for Adam than it is for Eve. And that's one of the things that we wanted to point out, is that there is a social construct element to this because we're social beings, but this is not merely a social construct. It's part of the created order. God did this by design.
Yeah. Well, and it's interesting. I'm just thinking of it now in light of, you know, the flurry that's going on with the same-sex marriage debate and all of this. And I know you guys talk about that a lot at CBMW. And, you know, just really how, you know, here we are at a place in history where we are having to define gender differences, and we're having to define distinctions. And I think, like you said, there's a theology in that, but what you're saying practically is extremely helpful as well. And I think it's helpful to have these examples because we can look practically at them and say, wow, okay, this is what this looked like, and this is something that I can aspire to, and this is something where maybe there was some failure, but here's how it played out. Okay, quickly, you guys move on to a couple other sections. You start talking about husbands and wives, and then you move and talk about family. I want you guys to give a brief idea here to some men out there. You talk specifically about men loving their wives, and you talk about how most men know that they need to love their wives, but you talk specifically about how men are to love their wives, and what are some of the distinctives that you found there?
Well, one passage would be in 1 Peter 3 and also Colossians 3, where Peter is, in 1 Peter 3, is giving specific ways in which a man should love his wife. And so he should live with her in an understanding way, which means he's to treat her uniquely, not generically. There are certain things about her that he needs to learn and know and really study her so that he understands what her likes are, what her dislikes are, what brings her joy. Does she like walks in the park? Does she like to go out for dessert? Does she like flowers as opposed to going out to dinner? I mean, there are all sorts of things that a man needs to know about his wife, and he needs to study her and be a student of what she's all about and what she likes or dislikes. And then he is supposed to care for her. In Ephesians 5, Paul says that, you know, you're one flesh. And so what man ever hated his own flesh, but he nourishes and cherishes his own flesh? And so just like a man would get hungry and go eat, nobody gives him an award for that. Just like he would get hurt and go to an ER, nobody gives him an award for that. He should be just as caring about his own wife and treating her like she is part of his flesh, and to care for her as just part of his second nature as he would for his own flesh.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you talk to guys, what's their reaction to that? Do a lot of guys think that that's kind of this insurmountable task, or is it something that they want to take on? I'd be interested in their responses.
Well, I think, you know, what I think Dan and I have had success even on campus in dealing with these younger men is, you know, just asking them questions. For instance, you know, how are you going to bless your wife when you go home today? And then giving them ideas on how to do that. I think what you said earlier here is that most men know They need to demonstrate their love for their wives. They're just not very creative. They're just not very proactive. They haven't had good examples. And I think so far, for Dan and I anyway, when we give men ideas in that regard, they're excited about it and typically implement those things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're trying to move them beyond, like Randy says, there's two elements. There's the study and then there's the execution of the loving your wife and understanding your wife. So we encourage a lot of studying your wife, understanding your wife, and then, you know, making sure you actually are intentional about doing those things. A lot of guys will study, then they'll put together a master list, you know, get a journal out, say all the things you're going to do, and boast of great ideas, but never actually do them. And so we're trying to get them off the dime to motivate them, to encourage them, and to excite them about loving their wife in that way. And so that's why we came in and kind of feathered in how to do that. That's the practical theology, and trying to get them to be intentional and not to come home and say, this year we're going to do these 89 things, mm-hmm. but rather just come home and do it. Just do it and surprise her and not have to have something fully thought through and surprise her all the time with ways of that they could love their wife.
Hmm. You know, it's interesting as I'm thinking about this, I think of women and how we often can, you know, whether for good or for bad, get into a comparison game with other women and say, wow, you know, I mean, it could either be bad if I'm comparing myself to her and I don't measure up, or it could be, she has some great ideas. I love what she did here. That really inspires me to do X, Y, Z. Do you see that with men as well? I mean, do they look to one another for ideas and for encouragement and support, or maybe encouragement and support is kind of a weird way of saying it, but for the spurring on of one another to kind of rise above to the next level and take that challenge?
Yeah, I think most men do appreciate a challenge. This proverb says, you know, like iron sharpens iron, so one man sharpens another. And men in their relationships and their discipleship, they're forged together. And so most men that I know do appreciate a healthy challenge from another man, as long as he doesn't feel like that man's trying to show him up or embarrass him, but just genuinely calling him to a higher standard and a higher level. I think most men in general still appreciate that kind of relationship.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, I agree wholeheartedly with that. They want the challenge. They need to be challenged. They're competitive, even by nature, in their DNA. And so I think that the more you can give them and come alongside them and say, "Here's an idea," or cause them to think outside of the box that they're currently living in is huge.
Hmm. Okay, you guys also talk about, you tread into the area of spiritual leadership, and that's something that we throw out often. It's something we talked about earlier in the show and kind of our own perceptions of it and prejudices maybe that we've grown up with about how that looks. What, when it comes to spiritual leadership and men, whether of their wives or of their families, what is common to all? What do all Christian men need to know about leadership that has to be kind of the non-negotiables? And then where is there room for different personalities or giftings, ways to do things differently? I think a lot of guys seem to get a little bit stymied by that, feeling there are expectations upon them that they just don't have in them.
Yeah, I think some things that would be common would be, I mean, something basic like a man should lead his family in finding a good local church, a Bible-believing local church. A man should lead his wife in particular, but his whole family in terms of just, you know, reading a good book, not necessarily together in the same room, but buy a book and each of you read it. You know, I like to find things during the day just in the course of my work, find a good blog or something and come home at dinner and just read a section of that. You don't have to be a Bible scholar. You don't have to be a pastor. You don't have to be formally theologically trained to know something about God's Word and to be able to communicate that to your home and even just different ideas and things that you come across during the day to present that to your family, discuss it, talk about it. It really is a Deuteronomy 6 model of just when you rise and when you sit, making sure that God is the subject of regular, natural conversation.
Hmm. I think on the character front, Lisa, one of the big issues is to teach them humility and selflessness and have them model that, and that leaders fundamentally give more than they take. And we pounded that in our class, and we tried to make an emphasis of that in the book as well. We just feel like, especially young men, they need to understand giving and generosity and giving of themselves and modeling that with their family, with their spouse, and not become selfish but selfless, and let the gospel eclipse one's own needs and care for the others, and God will take care of your needs. And that's just a fundamental character definition for a man. They give more than they take.
Okay. Well, I know you move into the next section where you talk specifically about families, and one thing that interested me here was your idea of initiating in the home and just many of the different suggestions you gave for that. And I think it's interesting, again, just trying to get into a guy's head and remembering conversations I've had with men in the past who say, oh, no, you know, the home, that's my wife's domain, and I don't touch that, and I'm not going to, you know, I just need to come and I'll do what I need to do, but really I'm providing and I bring home a paycheck and, you know, I just let her kind of run that. But you're saying that there are very specific things that men can do to be involved in the life of their home. And what would you say are some of the landmark ones that guys need to be aware of?
Well, we always have led with this idea of vision. The husband and father is the initiator of the vision. What do we want this home to look like? And he's also the keeper of it, meaning he's the one that has to regularly peek his head up and ask, are we accomplishing what we said we wanted to accomplish? Are we becoming what we decided we wanted to become in terms of a godly a home that honors God? And so a husband and a father has to lead in this area of vision and just say, help the family decide, what do we want this thing to look like 8 or 10 or 12 years from now? But also in the idea of being an example. You don't just give a vision and then leave the thing to everybody else. You're in the trenches with everybody else. You're telling them, watch me, imitate me as much as I imitate Christ, like Paul said. And you know, I think these are the things that a lot of men don't realize. It's either the do as I say, not as I do, which is hypocrisy and failed leadership. What we're saying is you've got to establish a vision, but then be involved in the trenches with your family to help accomplish that vision. They need to know you're in the trench with them.
One of the things I learned, Lisa, with while sitting in the class and Randy was teaching one day, is that he remarked to the guys as an illustration that he, when he came into the home, he would immediately make haste to greet his wife, and he'd have to dodge the kids. You know, they're coming at you from left and from right, and, you know, like a football team attacking their father, greeting him at the door, and he would dodge all them and make his way to his wife and then, you know, make sure he gave her a kiss first, and then, again, greeting the whole family. And it was really practical and really helpful. It's one of the things we implemented in our home from that class, as I was sitting there as a learner at that moment. And I do that now. So I'm putting the Heisman on the kids, going left, juking right, you know, just trying to dodge them. And they're trying to chase me down so that I can make my way to my wife to greet her first, because I just want them to understand the priority and that Dad loves Mom and that he wants to model what a healthy marriage looks like. And so that's just a little practical anecdote to what Randy was saying.
Yeah, that's good. So what would you guys say to, you know, knowing that our audience has a lot of single guys in it, what would you say to the single guy who maybe doesn't have a tangible vision of what this is going to ultimately look like for him? You know, he doesn't have a wife that he knows her strengths and weaknesses, knows her personality. He doesn't have the kids in tow that he knows them and their ages and whatever. What can he be doing now to prepare for roles of leadership and an understanding of manhood that ultimately will play out in marriage and in a home?
I think God, in the lives of Christian men, is always putting things in front of them to cultivate biblical masculinity that a lot of men don't recognize or initially even see or receive as such. Most men have things that they need to accomplish this week. At the beginning of every week, I make a list of the hardest phone calls I have to make, the hardest tasks I need to do, and then I do those things first because it helps me reject passivity, it helps me stay engaged, it helps me be an initiator, it helps me to not put off the hardest thing for last, which is the opposite of what a biblically masculine man would do. And so every man has some kind of task he's trying to accomplish, some kind of goals he's trying to accomplish. And in order to get there, it needs to be in practice of doing the hardest things first, making the hardest phone calls first, Most guys I know have some sort of domain. They have a dorm room. They have an office. They have a bedroom in their parents' house. Some domain. And I always tell young men, you know, part of masculinity is exercising dominion and keeping your domain in order. And even something as seemingly small as a disorganized office or a disorganized garage or a bunch of Burger King bags in the back seat of your car is a reflection of whether or not you're exercising dominion or dominion is being exercised over you. And so you can, even a single man is having masculinity cultivated in his life by God if he'll just look for those opportunities that are there every day.
Yeah, I'd echo that, Lisa. I'd say start now. Mm-hmm. There's no sense of delaying your leadership or waiting for the right circumstance and the moon, you know, to be in the right setting and, you know, all the stars lining up. I think you just do it right now. Get in the game. Second, I would say don't isolate yourself. Proverbs 18:1 says, he who isolates himself is a fool. Discipleship, leadership is a community project. He needs to be around as many people, around other couples, watching how they interact, studying how they interact, asking why he interacts like that, and just trying to figure it out and then kind of milk all of the cows and make his own butter and constantly be a learner, studying other men, studying other couples, and start now and avoid isolation. This is not a time to throttle back and to disengage. It's in time to engage and being very intentional with your leadership and your masculinity.
Yeah. So if he were to, if a young guy were to start that now and say, okay, yeah, I don't really have a lot of accountability. I don't really have a lot of mentorship in my life. Maybe I do need to start taking some initiative. If he really started to implement some of those things, what should he be looking for a year or two down the road that would be fruits of this?
Well, I would start with relationships. I mean, I think every guy ought to have three relationships. They ought to have a Paul, a mentor, someone that's older and wiser and is further down the trail. They ought to have a Barnabas, a peer, an encourager, someone side by side, someone in the trenches. And they ought to have a Timothy. They ought to be passing on. They're not a spiritual cul-de-sac. They're passing on truth. And so I'm looking for progress in their lives where I can see forged, intentional relationships that they have. They should be able to mark out and say, this man is my Paul, this man is my Barnabas, this man is my Timothy. I'm engaged on all fronts, because at the end of the day, it's about relationships, and they should have those. So if they're starting now and they're getting in the game, 3 years from now, I should be able to walk up on the corner and say, who's your Paul? Who's pouring wisdom into you? Who's further down the path? And who are you discipling? So you're not just getting information for your own purposes, but there's an expectation of reproduction that you're to reproduce your leadership in other new leaders and up-and-coming leaders and the next generation of leaders. So I would start by, again, looking at those relationships and making sure they have those and they are in place and they're avoiding isolationism.
Yeah, and what they would expect is that they would begin to see that the pattern of their life is to take initiative, to take responsibility, to be rejecting passivity more regularly. Those are the things that they would begin to see, and others responding to that in terms of followership. And these guys will realize there are people following them because they're leading in the way that God intended.
That's good stuff. All right. Well, we've been talking to Dan Dumas and Randy Stinson, both wonderful guys and the co-authors of A Guide to Biblical Manhood. And would highly encourage all of you to get a copy of this. We'll be linking to it from the site because, like I said, just some great practical stuff. Good scripture, too, and good examples. But really, you can just pull some of these lists and start working on them. And, you know, I think guys like lists. Women, we want to sit around and have everyone tell stories and maybe put ourselves in those stories and sit with our teacups and whatever. I don't know. Maybe not all women. I don't think I do. Anyway, but, you know, guys, they just want someone to tell them what to do and give them some good stuff. And I think you guys really, really have. So we love the work that you guys are all doing at SBTS out there. And certainly, are any of you planning a trip to Colorado anytime soon? What, Steve, have you doing? You know, does he send you places to go?
That'd be great.
Maybe I saw that he edited.
We would love to come, though.
That's what he needs to be doing instead of sitting around in his office all day long.
That's right.
Getting us some trips out that way.
I know.
Yeah, we love to go west.
Could you help Dan and I get on an elk hunt if we came out there?
Yes,
ma'am. Oh, absolutely. That's what we do here, us two women here at Boundless. We try to set up elk hunts when we're not doing the show.
Well, Steve wouldn't be interested because he's effeminate and quirky. But
I did see, Dan, that one of your personal goals in life is to eradicate skinny jeans for men. So right. I thought that was
Absolutely.
A good
and the good scooters
goal.
Don't leave off scooters even in Europe it's non-negotiable there
the scooters.
And you know that's why the bag analogy, you know, throwing your empty bags in the back seat, as Randy said, you can't do that with a scooter. That's another reason not to have a scooter in this life.
Exactly. Well, hopefully, guys will read this guide, and we'll get to work on that for sure. Maybe that'll be their first point of application. So
absolutely, sell your scooters, men.
Mm-hmm. Well, always a pleasure to talk to you folks. Do say hi to Dr. Moeller. We know I love to call him Al, but do say hi to him and Russell Moore on our behalf. We love having you guys advocate for us here at Boundless, but more importantly, advocating for marriage and family and for kingdom work and everything you guys have going on. So. Hugely a privilege. Thanks so much.
Well, thank you for having us. It's been
thank
great.
You.
Thanks.
We're all just in a race for what is and what could be.
What could be?
What could be?
Do you believe?
We're all just wanting something more than we can see.
You can see.
You can if you but.
I got a real mean agenda for my proposal. Getting nothing from it, but I thought I told ya. I got a clear conscience and it's leading me over.
We are opening up this week's inbox. I'm here with John Thomas. John, welcome.
Hey, hi, Lisa.
Great to hear from you down there in Arkansas.
It's great to be talking to you guys. I so enjoy getting to do this. Thank you for inviting me.
Hey, well, it's our privilege to be able to glean from your wisdom, because we know we have on Boundless Answers for a long time. So it's time to hear from you on the show as well.
All right.
And we will, because we have got a woman who has written in, and she says, I am 25, working college ministry, and deeply desire to be married someday. A few months ago, I broke up with a guy whom I dated for a few months. He's a really great guy. He's involved with our church. He's growing in community and in his faith, is a kind person with a great personality. And since we met, we had an instant connection. But I broke up with him because I didn't feel like we were in the same place spiritually. Don't get me wrong, he pursued me well, initiated hard conversations, he's learning and growing, but he became a Christian not long ago and is still figuring stuff out. I just wasn't sure if I could respect him enough as a spiritual leader. What exactly does it look like for a guy to be a spiritual leader in a relationship? What kinds of things should I be looking for? And is it okay to be watching and waiting for my ex-boyfriend and for the Lord to continue to work in both of our lives, anticipating dating in the future?
Well, Lisa, you know, when I hear that question, the article that comes to mind on Boundless was one entitled, I think it was entitled, Faith for the Man He'll Become.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great article, and in that article it talks about, you know, how girls can look around the culture that they're in and they can see some great husbands, some men who have been at this thing for a while, and they are looking for a guy that's at that level.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got to understand that whoever that husband is or whoever that father is that you admire, it took time for him to get there. And so the first thing I want to encourage her and others who are maybe thinking the same way is, you know, where he is right now hopefully won't be where he will be forever. And so here's the thing that I'm going to say. Here's what you need to look for when you're looking at young guys. You need to look at not so much where they are now or even how much Bible knowledge they have now, because it isn't about Bible knowledge. That's important. But what you want to look at is this the kind of guy who's showing some hunger, who is showing that he wants to pursue God, that he wants to learn, that he is wanting to soak things up. And so maybe he is just getting started, but what I would really zero in on is his hunger and his desire and his willingness to move forward. And if you see a hunger there, if you see a guy that's like, man, I maybe just became a Christian, but I want to soak up everything I can, and he's looking for ways to expose himself to discipleship, and he's pulling up against older guys to try to learn, he may not be where you are, having, you know, been on this journey a little bit longer, but that's a great guy to be watching, because it won't take him long to get to that place. And so when I define leadership in a relationship, I don't define it as someone who has more Bible knowledge than the other person. I define leadership as leading in hunger and leading in pursuit as much as I do having knowledge or revelation of who God is. And it isn't just Bible knowledge, like I said, although that's important. So that's the first thing I want to say. Look and see if those characteristics are there, and then have faith for what he'll become in that. Now, if he's just kind of, you know, if he's not showing any interest, he doesn't want to grow, that's a whole different topic. The other thing I want to say is don't underestimate the influence that you as a girl can have on making a guy wanting to grow in the Lord. I remember being in college and being attracted to a girl who was well advanced in terms of just her maturity in the Lord. But it inspired me. It motivated me. Now, it may not have been the best motivation in the world, but it motivated me to look at myself and say, you know, is this the kind of girl that I could lead? Is this someone that I could offer something to in spiritual terms? And it really caused me to kind of take it up a notch. It really caused me to want to grow and learn and be discipled. And so I want to say to her, be encouraged that you have the ability to influence in that way. This sounds like a great guy to me. You just have a few years on it, maybe as a Christian, but I think that, you know, this is something that probably the Lord can make that up in a short amount of time. And he sounds like a great catch to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, from what we've heard,
from the letter, sounds like it.
Yeah, exactly. I would just say too, in hearing what you said there, John, the idea for guys, you know, one thing for guys and then one for girls is, I liked what you said about, yeah, if you're not seeing any signs of this, then you need to be careful. And with guys, I think they need to be careful to not be resentful of women. You know, women will say, well, I'm looking for this in a leader, I'm looking for that, and whether or not those are, you know, a little bit exaggerated or a little bit unrealistic, guys need to not be resentful of an understanding of spiritual leadership, and to not say, oh, great, you know, I'm just going to have to join another Bible study, or I'm going to have to do this or do that. You know, they're responsible before the Lord for growing in their faith and for understanding what that looks like. And I see a lot of guys get very defeatist about that or angry about it and just say, you know, well, now I'm not going to do anything then, because I don't want to, you know, do it just for the sake of XYZ. At the same time, I think ladies need to not be saying, and I think you covered this well, the idea of, you know, he has to have written a study guide on the Book of Lamentations,
right,
and his favorite book has to be Fox's Book of Martyrs. I mean, no one wants that. So.
Right. Now, and you know, that kind of opens up another category of, are we kindred spirits, and, you know, mm-hmm, do we like the same things? But that's a whole different area, of just kind of personality connection.
Right.
I think in just the area of, here's a guy who really wants to pursue the Lord. He may not know how yet. He may not know all the ways. He may not know all the good books. He may not know those things. But you look into his heart and you see someone who's real serious about this and who wants to go for this thing. I think that's the kind of thing that you're looking for. That's a young guy who's got all kinds of potential to be an awesome husband, father, leader, and all those things. But just because, you know, he hasn't taken the so-and-so course yet that you took, I would put less weight on that.
Yeah. Well, great insight, John, and thank you again for really, I think, taking a very reasoned and prayerful approach to addressing these questions. I think this was a great example of that. So thanks so much for weighing in.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
All right. Well, that is it for this week's show. Write to us, editor@boundless.org, with your questions so we can address it in the future. Also, you know, we like to just point you to articles or different resources that may be helpful to you. And so we would love to have the opportunity to do that as well. And when you see us post a question or a show on Facebook, make sure that you comment there as well and let your friends know about the different articles and different Q&As that we have going on, because they may be able to help them in the future, too. So we want to be able to broaden our base and our influence, let others in on the great wisdom and insight we receive from folks here. So that is it for this week's show. Make sure you join us next week. Until then, I'm Lisa Anderson for The Boundless Show.
The Boundless Show is a production of Boundless.org, focused on the family.